You're listening to the Tyler's Den podcast, the only Red FC podcast by the fans for the fans. Hello and welcome to the Tyler's Den podcast, episode 12. My name's Dan Wimbush, otherwise known as Wim, but welcome to the latest in our weekly podcast for It's All Things Reading Football Club. The theme song you heard at the top of the show was Biscuit Men by Violet Class. The big Reading fans, guys, go and check them out, violetclass.com, and they're on Twitter at Violet Class. We had four people in the studio last week. We've halved it this week, gone for a more economical mode. No Rob and Johnny is away. Rumour has it he was chased out of town by an angry mob, including John Halls and John Oster. But no, seriously, he's at work. But I am delighted to say that I am joined by Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Yeah, we kept the star players for today.
We have indeed, yeah, the core group. My town, my club, all that jazz. right then, some people actually suggested that you know, we just run the episode from the Peterborough game the other week because unless you've been living away, and you're lucky if you have been. Reading's result of the weekend, Red, Sheffield Wednesday 5, Reading 2. This was a Sheffield Wednesday side who hadn't won a game all season and were bottom of the league. So that tells you about all you need to know, really. Before we launch into dissecting that result, I'll just quickly read out the team that went up to Hillsborough. It was McCarthy, Kelly, Pierce, Morrison, Gunter, Baird, Guthrie, Robson, Canoe, Abita, McClure, Pogrebniak, and you saw Adam Lafondre and Nick Blackman come off the bench. So, Westy, where do you want to start?
Well, we'll start with last week, the comments we made about Reading and their rather kind-hearted approach to going to people who haven't scored for a season or haven't won an away game or haven't won a home game and always seeming to trip up and give them points or give them goals. I think we all had that sneaking suspicion that might happen, but I don't think any of us thought it was going to get beat 5-2. And to be fair to the Sheffield Wednesday, they were unlucky it wasn't more than that because McCarthy was forced into making a number of one-on-one saves. The disappointing thing for me was when I said last week, and you didn't have a go at me, but you argued against the case that when Reading have any sort of pace and movement in front of them, they get pulled all over the place. I think most of the goals, pace and movement, two of the goals come from just big boots forward where Kelly, who's deputising for Bridge, has been completely out of position and Antonio's had a field day down his side during the match. And I always liked Antonio when he was there. I did say at the time he was a raw footballer, but he certainly had some talent. And he tore Reading apart, really, in times. And the disappointing thing for me was not only that, is when the second half started, Reading just still carried on and they still didn't seem to get into the game. And then you hear Nigel Atkins saying, you know, we had a lot of the ball in the first half. I keep hearing him say that. Don't matter how long you've got the ball for, it matters who puts the ball in the net.
Right, let's get the positives out of the way. To be fair, having had a few days now to sit there and think about it, I actually saw, there were a couple of positives. Reading did actually look quite decent going forward. They did have a few half chances, got into good areas. They had their traditional first 15 minutes. And I think I said on Twitter, Reading have had a good first 10 minutes. I'll only believe it if they turn it into 90. Obviously, they didn't. So the goals started and they just didn't stop. As you mentioned, Stephen Kelly, absolutely torn apart at left back. We've had this concern, haven't we, that Reading haven't got a backup left back. And I'm sorry, Stephen Kelly. I know you're a decent right back, experienced player, but you're not a left back. And as you said, Antonio had an absolute field day, just an absolute mare. Alex Pearce and Sean Morrison as well, both pulled all over the place. And generally for the defence, it was an absolute nightmare. And Tommy's written on the website some of the points that he's been making about the defence. And he's saying that I think Reading are missing Jem Karachan and obviously Wayne Bridge or a left-footed left back. But there's just no mobility there. And I think that's going along what you said about Reading not having quite the mobility.
Yeah, and I think Johnny touched on it last week when he said about Ledgewood. Now, I'm not a big Ledgewood fan because I don't think he's a footballer and therefore he doesn't fit into the system that we are playing at the moment, the way we're going to approach the game. But what Reading lack, and if you watch a lot of them goals back and even some of the goals for the rest of the season we conceded, is nobody seems to react to the ball when it's moving. When no one seems to press the ball or make a tackle. I don't think anyone in that side, especially in the midfield, are tacklers. There's no one that can take the ball. Like Lidl will nick a ball, where Karajan will nick a ball or put himself about. There's no one that can win that ball. And if you watch Antonio's goal especially, he seemed to have so much time to pick his spot and put it in there. Nobody pressed him at any point. Pierce went to when it was far too late, But there were three players to Antonio, and no one went to the ball.
Reading have, throughout the past few years, have always been a backing off unit, haven't they?
They've backed off. Oh, yeah, definitely the Premier League.
But the difference is that they backed off, but then they did have those players, the Ledgeries and the Carachans, to come in, nick the ball away or push it. Baird doesn't seem to have that mobility, and obviously Pearce and Morrison just don't.
No.
And it's a whole debate we could have for hours, but I'm sorry, we have said it all season. We said it right from the very first show that we didn't think they were the best combination, and unfortunately they're showing it. Both very highly talented players with good potential, but put them together, especially at this stage in their career, and I'm sorry, it isn't an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, as I say, all through that midfield, there's no one who's going to win the ball. And up front, I've actually predicted, well, not on the show, but I thought that Robson Carney might start this game just because he's more mobile. And that proved to be the case. I mean, he had a number of chances he could have scored. I mean, there's one that he just put past the post, and there was another one he put over the bar. And he did give Reading that extra option of over the top or someone to get in behind him, which worked relatively well at times. But it just the concerning thing with me was the lack of just the basics. And I think Atkins pointed out himself. I mean, if you look at the one, I think it was the third goal they scored, when Baird has got the ball on his own edge of the box, and he's passed it into basically no man's land. It was the most dangerous ball you ever played.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, the ball's in the back of the net again. You think, get the basics right, and then we can push forward. But it doesn't seem to happen. We keep saying, when's this big performance coming? And it just seems to be getting worse rather than better.
Well, two things about that. First one, obviously, got to feel sorry for Sean Morrison and Alex McCarthy. Oh, yeah. Absolute calamity. And the bigger person you've got to feel more unfortunate for is yourself. Because it didn't count for your bet.
No, it didn't count for
your
bet.
2 weeks in a row, Sean Morrison scores, and this one doesn't pay out. But, just terrible. I mean, Redden did get a cut. But Gremio, great header, I thought, as
it
well.
It was good. Gunther played pretty well.
Yeah, he did.
But then he's quite mobile, you know what I mean? And Kelly, I've said it before about Kelly, every time Kelly's played, and even when he gets a run in the team, even when he's playing right back, he very rarely impresses me. I've never sat there and thought, oh, Kelly's played well today.
He's Andy Griffin for me. If you played him week in, I think he's only had one game at right back this season. I think he played quite well. Can't think who it was against. You know, I think if you gave him a run in the team at right back, it'd do okay. It'd be a steady 7 out of 10 player week in, week out. But he's not a left back.
No, but the worrying thing for me was, if you're playing left back, you should still be able to get your positioning right. And he didn't on two occasions. Well, actually three occasions when he was completely out of position for Antonio's. When Antonio cut the ball across and they scored again. I think it's Conor Wickham's goal. He was nowhere near the play. So get the basics right. If you can't get your positioning right, then it doesn't matter if you're playing left or right back.
I think, again, while I'd love to just completely tear into the side and to be fair, I think I lost my cool on Twitter on Saturday. I was fuming.
I can't think anyone wasn't.
No, it was just getting very sort of bitty. But anyway, as I said, I mean, time to think it over and look at things. I have got a lot of sympathy for Nigel Atkins. I can't defend a result like that. I can't defend the 6-0 at Peterborough. But this team, he had no choices. He had nothing he could do to change it up. You could say, well, yeah, give Akpan a game or Gorks, but Gorks isn't going to make a difference.
No. It's difficult. Again, we said this before. It's difficult to implement the way he wants to play, a bit like Rodgers, when you haven't got the staff to do it.
No.
I've said before all season, Pearce and Morrison are not footballing centre-backs. He's forcing them to play football. You're going to have mistakes. Mm. They might be able to, don't get me wrong, they might be able to change it around. By the end of the season, they might look great. But they haven't got that dove check that McGee had when he could give him the ball and he was very relaxed and he did bring others into it and he could play football. Even in midfield, you've got Guthrie, but beyond that, who are your footballers? I don't think there is any.
Well, I think there's several things that they could do. I can personally see Baird dropping into the back four. I can see him playing centre-back.
He could have gone right-back.
Yeah, well, I can see Baird going into the centre alongside probably Morrison if he's got the armband. Just to play a little bit more of a footballing player and just to give that back to a rest. But it's the injuries. It comes down to the injuries again, for me, is one of the big factors. And I wrote on Monday, go check out on the Tullyhurst website, what's going wrong with Reading. And the two points that I'll bring up now, I said the first one's injuries. That injury list is still massive. And we'll chat to Charles in a minute just to see how the injury list is coming along. But I'm sorry, but if you take Williams, Drenter, Roberts, Ledgerwood, Bridge, Karachan, and then plus the players that have been in and out with injury, like Robson Kanu and McCarthy and people like that. I phrase it this way. You took that 106 team, and it was a lineup of Stack, Murty, Ingemarsson, Dobson, you know, Makin, Oster, Hunt, Harper, Gunnarsson, and then a 17-year-old Long and Lita up front. It wouldn't have been half as good as it was.
No, of course not.
Because you can't take five or six big players out of it. And we've said all along, Reading's squad will keep them high in the league because it's so deep. But in individual games, that 11 isn't necessarily better than Sheffield Wednesday's. Players like Matty Fryett...
But clearly wasn't.
Well, yeah, exactly. Players like Matty Fryett and Connor Wickham, good players. Connor Wickham's, what, an £8 million player?
Yeah, and arguably, both of them players could have got into our side on that day.
Very much so. But so the injuries, I think, certainly plays a part. But one thing you could maybe direct at Adkins and the club in general is this whole passion argument. And we said to Charles last week, didn't he?
Yeah.
Lack of smiles on the pitch. And yeah, once again, as soon as their heads went down on Saturday, that was it.
It was clearly noticeable, and I was just about to bring it up, but that we did say this last week, that when the going gets tough, Reading don't exactly help himself, because there's not, again, is there a lack of leaders on that pitch? Is there a lack of players that were going to prepare to throw their body in, like your John Terry's, like your Carajans, like your Phil Parkinson's, like your Murty's, when things are going badly? And I'm saying there isn't them sort of players.
Not at all.
When things are going well, yeah, great, we can all play football then, everyone wants the ball, but it's when it's not going well, you need someone to lead on the pitch, and I don't think they've got that
player. No, there's nobody to raise it, and that's why I think they do need players like Roberts or like a Leisurewood back in there, at least in the mix, just to try and raise it. But unfortunately, both those guys, wrong side of 30, and not looking like they're coming back in time.
We'll also say that there was a slight undertone to what Atkins said when he was interviewed after the game. When he said about Williams and Trent, he was asked about them. And again, I might be just picking this out of the air, but they said to him, what's the news on Williams and Trent? Because they had impact injuries. And he said, yes, he goes, it's rather a long time for an impact injury. And he sort of left it like that, but he didn't really explain himself. And he did sound there was a little undercurrent to what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we'll chat to Charles in a minute, but I think Get Reading reported this week that Williams is back in training.
Yeah, but then it's been 7-8 weeks and Drenthe seems to have disappeared. And there's no news on him whatsoever.
No. He was at the sign-in at the Megastore and he was up there picking up his copy of Call of Duty.
I suppose he had to do that. It was contractual. But
whatever the reason, they're unavailable to the manager. It's probably injury, but I said they've been missing since September. So the squad's been going on about two of the biggest signings. So
the next question is then,
next
question is then, who starts this week? Because let's face it, QPR are probably the hardest team to play in this division. They have got a bigger squad than this, and they've got better players than this, largely.
As I said, on the injury front, it looks as if people like Williams and Sharp might be back. I think the one thing this does for Nigel Adkins, it gives him complete carte blanche to tear up the team sheet and start again and say, do you know what? You guys have had you've won one out of the last six games. I've stuck with you. There are players coming back, and I'm sorry, I'm going to try it again. So maybe he does throw Gawkes back in. Gets his form aside.
I think he's more likely to see Williams start. He might even change the system. He might play three in the middle.
Yeah. And as I said, he maybe throws Baird in the centre back, or he could do any number of things. But this will be a real week where we see him give it a proper test, or maybe just says, you've got this one final week before the international break, and then when everyone's top 100% fit, he changes it. So it's all up in the air. At the end of the day, Saturday was horrendous. I don't think anybody's really defending it. I don't think you can.
At no stage can you defend it, because all of us, there's no one here that didn't think Reading would at least get a point away to Sheffield Wednesday.
And I'm sorry, but a 6-0 and a 5-2 on your resume already this season, plus some of the hammerings they got at the end of last year, it's not good.
Well, we said last week as well that when you looked at the Millwall result, if you drew there and you win at Sheffield Wednesday, everyone forgets about it. But now it looks like an even worse result because they've lost to Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
And you've got QPR next, and we've got a hard run of games coming up now, whereas them three, you would have earmarked for 7 points.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you add in the draw at Barnsley as well, and it's not...
We scratched the win at Yeovil.
No. And the defence, the defence of a lot of people on Saturday, and I sort of said as well, you do have to put it in perspective that we are still fifth, but that gap that had opened up between the top six and the rest is completely gone now. Mm. Reading can't afford slip-ups. And even more worrying it now is the gap between Reading and the top two.
Yeah.
There's already a noticeable gap, and Burnley don't seem to be slowing down.
They don't. And like we said, we're still fifth, but we had a run of relatively easy games. Now we've got a run of hard games. We could easily slip out of those playoffs. And once you slip out of them, with the players and the characters, what they've shown me so far this season, I'd be worried if things started getting worse, because I don't think there's anyone's going to raise it.
No, and unfortunately, I can't really see that many reinforcements coming in January either.
No, I think we've had the lot there.
No, well, as I said, we'll have a chat now with Charles Watts, who's the Get Reading reporter, to take a closer look at some of those injuries and other news around the club.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Charles, thanks very much again for joining us.
No problem. How are you? Yeah, could be better, I think. Oh,
we're slightly disappointed, let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't pretty. Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't pretty, though, was it?
It wasn't pretty at all.
You saw it with your own eyes at Hillsborough. What were your impressions?
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the Peterborough game. And I didn't really want to be reminded of that one again. Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, defensively, it was a bit of a shambles, really, wasn't it? And as Nigel said after that, and I, for the first 15 minutes, I thought, oh, this is going to be as I thought it was going to be. I thought Reading played well. I thought Sheffield Wednesday's defence looked creaky and they were there for the taking. And then suddenly the first goal goes in and Reading just crumbled. You know, defensively, they were awful, really, really poor. And there was so much space between the centre-backs, the full-backs. Although saying that, I thought Chris Gunter came out with some... I thought he was fairly decent, him for Grignac. But other than that, it was just a really, really bad day at the office. Fair play at Sheffield Wednesday. You know, they played well. Fryer and Wickham caused loads of problems. But, yeah, Reading's defence didn't cover themselves in glory.
So how you spoke to Nigel after the game. How did he try and explain away the result?
Well... in Nigel's own unique way, you know, he first of all said we started well. I think he was really desperate to sort of get that point across that he actually thought they started well, but I didn't think that came across too well because he just lost 5-2. There's no real point in saying, yeah, we started well for the first 15 minutes. Because defensively, there were certainly questions there, but he didn't really want to have a go at his players. I've yet to really hear him do that apart from against Peterborough when he accepted they were awful. He did kind of question a few people's character after the game, especially in the second half. I certainly got the sense he was a bit disappointed with how some people reacted once the fourth goal had gone in. So it'll be quite interesting to see what the team is this Saturday, really. I wasn't sure if he was hinting that he might make a few changes, which I'm not quite sure would be the worst thing. After a defeat like that, it's going to be quite tough to go in with the same side against QPR. So that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
We mentioned he's basically got free reign now to do whatever he likes with the team because nobody's safe their place after a result like that.
No, not at all. But I mean, if he is going to make some changes, he's going to have to sort of take out some quite established players. Because you look at Pearce and Morrison, I think they've played every single minute between them so far in the league. You know, they haven't had a rest at all this season. And, you know, Danny Guthrie's firmly established in central midfield. So is Chris Baird since he's come in to replace Jem. So if he's going to sort of wield the axe a little bit, it'd be interesting to see if he goes that way, you know, along the spine, rather than what he's been doing so far this season. You know, sort of the beaters come in, McAnuff's come in, players like that. It'd be interesting to see if he really sort of touches that, the part right down the middle, which he's left well alone so far this season. And, you know, he could do that. There's the option of possibly dropping Chris Baird back into centre-back and playing alongside, you probably presume, Morrison as his skipper. And possibly adding a little bit of sort of energy into midfield if Danny Williams is fit enough, because Danny's obviously back now. He's back, he's had 4 weeks training. You know, could he be an option? Even Hope Pan, who has obviously said to me this week that he's desperate for first team opportunities so much that he might even think about leaving on loan. That is, so he's got a few options available to him. It's just whether or not he does that.
We were saying this week and last week, do you think we're missing, talk about attitude as well. Do you think they went into this game with the wrong attitude? And if they did, why do you think that is?
I don't think they went in with the wrong attitude, you know. I just think, because they, as Nigel said, they started well, but it was as soon as the first goal went in, all hell broke loose. Now, everyone seemed to lose their shape. It didn't help having Stephen Kelly out at left back. He didn't have his finest game, but, you know, he's a right back. And He moved over. Yeah, he can do a job there. You'd expect him to probably do a better job than the one he did, but it didn't help having him over there. There wasn't the balance, and you know he had a bit of a shocker. Really, the first goal, he sort of misjudged the log ball in. Then Alex got caught in sort of no man's land behind him, whether to come, whether to stay, and you know just gave him a tap. And the second goal was just dreadful from Kelly. When he just let Antonio sort of run in from the right wing, sort of backed off, let him get a shot away. Not really acceptable, and I'm sure he will hold his hands up for that one. But it was just strange. As soon as that first goal went in, the heads dropped. Sheffield Wednesday suddenly got up. And I think sometimes you have that, don't you? When a team hasn't won for ages, then suddenly it happens, it all clicks. And it's just, you know, as it panned out on Saturday, everything went right for them, everything went wrong for Reading.
And once again, as we said last week, and I quoted you in the article I wrote on the website on Monday, a lack of smiles. Which isn't surprising when you get dumped, but still.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite hard to smile, I suppose, when you're losing 5-2 to bottom place team. But after the game, I was talking to Sean Morrison again, and he was like, you know, this won't affect us. You know, this is the best dressing room I've ever been
in. Should be affecting you, to be honest.
It's got the best morale. We'll be able to come back from this one. But you do just sense there is something not quite there. I'm not sure, you know, who am I to say, but, you know, I see them week in, week out. And there is just seems to be something kind of lacking, a real sort of fun I don't know, a team spirit, but
there's nobody dragging them up by the bootstraps.
Yeah, we said there's no leaders, there's no Murty, there's no Parkinson, there's no one's going to put a big tackle in, or there's no one's going to roll their sleeves up and get stuck in.
Or in your terms, there's no Tony Adams, Patrick Vieira.
Yeah, they're sort of players. Indeed, oh, there's only one of them. But yeah, I don't know, because Danny Guthrie, I think he'll get in, but he got dragged off at the weekend because Nigel was too scared that he was going to get booked and would miss the QPR game. Because I think I hadn't even noticed that, but I think he must have been on four bookings because Nigel said afterwards that he made the decision to take him off once the fourth goal got in because he was worried that he was going to get riled and get himself booked and miss QPR. Because he's the one person I think, you know, he will go in with that tackle in centre midfield. He's an experienced lad and he seems to be this season, he's sort of welcoming the extra responsibility and he's taken that on his shoulders. And I think he's done well, but yeah, I think apart from him, there isn't really someone who's going to do that. Jem, obviously, when Jem was around, he had that energy, didn't he, where he got himself around the pitch and sort of raised others. But yeah, maybe that is something that they're missing, a real, real strong leader. But you look around football these days and there's not actually that many of them anymore.
Fair point.
No, I think Reading have got some strong personalities in the dressing room, but they're all injured. The likes of Roberts and Ledgerwood.
Yeah.
Or out of favour, people like Joby McAduff. But yeah.
I think Joby should have played on Saturday. I know Joby comes in for some grief, and I've said on it before that I think it's a little bit unfair, but I thought he's looked pretty bright the last couple of sub appearances he's made. I thought he came on against Millwall and looked bright. I thought he did against Doncaster the week before as well. And I was a little bit surprised he didn't play up at Hillsborough. I thought he would have played, and I wouldn't be surprised if he plays this Saturday, actually.
I think that they definitely need to change something. But there is some good news for Nigel Adkins. As you mentioned earlier, Danny Williams is back in training. Yeah. Can you just sort of give us any sort of other general updates? Obviously, the injury list is as long as your arm, but who might we see back on Saturday, realistically?
Well, I think Sharp and Williams are definitely going to be back. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if Sharp starts. You know, he's had another 4 weeks training. Maybe a little bit of a risk just running straight in from the start, but maybe that might be the sort of curveball that could sort of work out for Nigel. But yeah, I mean, Danny will definitely be available unless he's had a setback this week that we haven't heard about. But he was having a 4 weeks training. He sort of joined in last Thursday and Friday as well. He's done a whole week this week. Billy was very close to playing on Saturday. I think Nigel made the decision Saturday morning up at Hillsborough. But he was up there. He travelled with him and he did a big training session on the pitch before the game as well. So he'll be available. Royston, I saw Royston on Monday. He's not quite there yet. He's a little bit behind Danny, but I would say after the international break, possibly not. It's quite hard to tell with Royston, though. But yeah, possibly.
I think on his Instagram, he said he was back running last week. So
yeah, hopefully. He is back joining in, doing some stuff, but he's not sort of full training yet like Danny is. He's a little bit behind, but you'd think a couple of weeks from today, you know, after the international break, then it'd be a really good. You'd expect he's going to be around. Then he was walking pretty freely when I saw him on Monday, so it doesn't seem like there's that much pain there anymore. It's just about getting the fitness up. The problem with Royston, he hasn't played a lot for 6 weeks or however long it is. He might be quite lacking in that area at the moment. But there is light at the end of the start.
I was going to say his hands are in full fitness though, because he's been playing plenty of Call of Duty by the looks of it.
He has been playing plenty of Call of Duty. Very excited about it as he was as well. I think Danny Williams coming back is going to be important. He was really beginning to settle into the side, I thought, just before the injury, which made it a real shame, even more of a shame when he got it, and he's been out for so long, because he's sort of taken his time to adjust, hadn't he, at the start of the season, and sort of gave fleeting appearances from the bench. But I thought, having come on, he sort of started it at Yeovil when he came off the bench and had extended game up there, played really well, and then he played well against Leeds. So I think that would be good to have him back. He's just another option, isn't he? And he's a decent player.
Well, that is, I mean, those are two bits of good news for Nigel Adkins. But the key question is it going to make any difference on Saturday against QPR? Can you see Reading getting a result against Harry Redknapp's side?
Well, I said they were going to win 3-0 at Hillsborough, so I'm not in the best of runs at the moment.
In which case, you should probably be predicting a QPR win.
I predicted the horrible sit on the fence model in the paper today when I was doing the page. I know, but I think that's... I don't know. I was going through the QPR team today. I spoke to the QPR reporter at the Hammersmith Chronicle. The team is scary. The squad is scary. It's just, it's amazing. I was talking to him and he was like, oh, because you know, what's the Argentinian guy, Forlan. He got himself injured last week, didn't he? And he's out of the season. But they're bringing in Nico Kranjčar to replace him this week because Kranjčar missed out last week, but he's fit and available for Saturday, apparently. So he's just coming in. And you've got players like that to come. And you've got Sean Wright Phillips on the bench. People, I mean, you go through all of the list of players. They're just all Premier League, proven Premier League players. So it's going to be really tough. And they're hard to beat. They've lost once. I think they've only conceded seven. So it's going to be tough for Reading. But the way the Championship is, isn't it? You lose to Sheffield Wednesday last week and turn over QPR this week. You never know.
QPR have had a couple of dicey results as well recently. So I don't think they're unbeatable.
No, certainly not. I think last week was their first win in four, didn't they? They'd got turned over pretty convincingly at Burnley. And it's not that that's embarrassing because a lot of teams have been losing up there. And then they drew a couple, sort of Wigan, wasn't it? And Millwall, they had the 2-2. So, yeah, they're not. I wouldn't say they're flying high. And they don't score many goals either, do they? They're not exactly turning teams over and smashing them each week. So it's a good chance to be. I think that's why I sat on the fence with 1-1, to be fair.
After a 5-2 defeat at bottom of the league, I think I might take a 1-1. But Charles, thanks very much again for taking time to join us. Where can we follow you on Twitter?
@Charles_Watts.
And we'll speak to you again next week before the international break.
Brilliant. All right, boys. Have a good one.
See you later. Cheers, Charles.
Speak to you later. Ta-da. Bye.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, thanks again to Charles for joining us. And if you want to read any of his news articles or Reading updates, you can go onto the Get Reading website at getreading.co.uk. A couple of little things then to come off the back of Charles Westy. I suppose best to start with the QPR game on Saturday. Charles going for a 1-1 there. How do you see it going?
I think you summed it up beautifully. I think most of us would take a 1-1 at this precise moment in time. But, you know, Reading historically tend to drag good results out when you least expect it. So you never, again, it's a championship. You never know what's going to happen. I said on to Charles just there that results-wise, QPR haven't been blowing teams away and they've certainly had a few dicey results recently. So they're beatable. It depends what Reading team turns up. If they turn up and play anywhere near their best, we could win. If they turn up playing like they did the other day, they could take a hammering. It's completely unknown quantity at the minute. Playing well.
Yeah, and I suppose the one good thing is, I mean, we've questioned the, I don't know, desire, passion or whatever of the squad. But if these are, even if they're a disunited group at the moment, they are going to want to raise themselves for playing a team like QPR on the live on the telly. You know, there's no better chance to show what you've got as a team and as a squad than a live TV game. And I think as well that the two lads coming back from injury, Williams and Sharp, will be a really big boost to the squad as well.
Yeah, you certainly hope so. And I think if Billy Sharp was to start, I think it would raise the fans as well. You know, just to see him play well, it would get everyone on their toes. Yeah. And I just hope that we can get the first goal and maybe take the game to them, because I think they're there to be beat, especially at home. I mean, Reading got a good home record. I know we've drawn a few games of late, but we'd never look like losing all season at home. And you'd hope that carries on all season, because away, we're not quite so convinced.
Yeah, and even last time we were in the Championship and we weren't in the best of forms before Christmas, you know, we played Southampton and should have won were it not for a silly goal. Oh, and we, you know, smashed West Ham as well. So Reading do raise their games against the bigger teams. I'm hoping they'll do the same against QPR. I don't think we really need to run through the QPR team. Everyone knows the names in there. The Austins, the Kranjčars, the Greens, players like that. Barton. They're a cracking side. And it should be a good game. Good atmosphere anyway, it always is.
Yeah, it should be a good atmosphere. I don't particularly like early games. It's going to be difficult for me to get there. And my son's playing at half-time, so I will be there.
Oh, hello. Is he in the little penalty shootout?
He's in a little penalty shootout, yeah. Number 8, little blonde boy. That's my son, so you'll probably see a few goals from him.
He's going to get a load of stick now, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's just from me.
Just from you. Yeah. Excuse me, circuit.
Yeah.
What's the old rule you're supposed to be within so far?
So they both have to send me out if anything happens.
Oh, brilliant. I'll have to keep an eye on that one then. And okay, then go for it then. Score prediction?
I'm going to say 1-1 as well.
1-1. You know, we're going to get beat now. And I'm going to crucify for this. But I will go for a 3-1 Reading win out of nowhere.
Well, I hope you're right.
Yes, and fingers crossed for that. So just before we move on, For our special guest, who I'll announce in a second. Just one other point in pub chat this week. A little look at the lone lads out at the moment. Have you seen Michael Hector's goal at Aberdeen this week?
I did see Michael Hector's goal. I think I've seen him before, but it's probably the second time I've ever seen him. he's a big, strong lad, isn't he? He's a big lad. And that was a great strike. I mean, if he scores any better than that in his career, then he's done well. But he's doing well up at Aberdeen. He's had a few times he's not been in the side. But in general, he's been getting good reports. And I think their manager said that he didn't see that in the report he got when he signed him, that he could score goals for 35 yards. But if it's a one-off, it's a great one-off. But he certainly looks decent at that level. And how high the Scottish Premier is, I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, we asked him on Twitter, actually, and he was kind enough to respond to us. So thanks for that, Michael. I asked him, are you enjoying the SPL? Is it a big step up from sort of League One and Two? And he said, yeah, it is a big step up. So, yeah, I mean, fantastic strike. It's on our loan report this week. Go onto the website, thetalisman.com, and have a look at our latest loan report. You can watch the goal on YouTube. Cracking strike as well. Some other useful loan updates as well. Matt Partridge is doing really well out at Basingstoke. He scored this week. It did get sent off at the same time for a melee late in the half.
Hmm.
But I asked the local Basingstoke reporter as well, what do you think of Partridge? He's a 19-year-old centre-back. And he said he's the best loan player that Reading have sent there in recent years. And he says he does have a lot of potential. So another good one doing well. Mikael Anderson's getting regular game time. Nick Arnold's not doing quite so well at Wickham. But no, I think Hector is definitely the one to watch. His loan deal ends in January, so he is available to come back to Reading. It's not they're locked into a deal. And Derek McInnes, who's the Aberdeen manager, said he's not sure if Reading are going to let him stay. And the way these Morrison and Pearce are playing,
We haven't got a lot of cover. And if one of them gets injured, and again, Baird's future at the club is nowhere near sorted out in January. And with Anton not being about, will that ever happen? We don't know.
Yeah.
So there's no cover at centre-back. And if one of them wants to get injured and he's coming back in January, you might even see
that
on the bench.
He's a player as well, Hector, that last year when he was at Aldershot, played in midfield as well. So he's obviously a bit more comfortable with the ball. He scored a cracking goal for Aldershot as well in the cup as well, since I remember. So he's a bit more of a ball player at centre-back. So I wonder whether Adkins will give him a watch this space. Right then, you know, we've talked about QPR and given our predictions. Thought, you know, who could we get on as a guest host this week? And one man who's a man about London, having watched a team in hoops for many years, is one Mr. Johnny Fordham. Got a new job now. He covers multiple teams around the south, and he's watched QPR a number of times this year. So I thought, who better than to make his Tarlesden debut ahead of this big game than one Johnny Fordham?
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
Johnny, welcome to your debut on the Tarlhurst End podcast. I can't wait for this glamorous moment.
Hello, guys. It's an absolute pleasure to be invited on. It's taken you a while to buck your ears up and get me on here, but yeah.
Well, we were desperate for guests
to be here.
It's very desperate for guests. So they get you on.
I had desperate for guests every week.
top quality guests today. Everyone's been coming to the show. I've been fending away with a stick. Fending away with a stick. But yeah, I mean, how have you been? I mean, you left Get Reading in, was it March or April now?
End of March, beginning of April. So what's that? 6-7 months or so I've been in London. And yeah, it's been really good, actually. I've been having a great time. Getting out lots of games. Sadly, I've only done a few Reading games. That was mainly at the back end of last season.
They don't want to send you out to Championship clubs anymore, then?
Well, no, I do get to Championship clubs quite a bit, actually. I get to mainly go to QPR, though. So a lot of the time, I'll be, if I'm not doing a Premier League game, I do down at Loftus Road, normally.
Well, we'll come on to QPR in just a minute then. But I just wanted to quickly ask you, you say, you know, you've been away from following Reading now for sort of 6 months, and you've always been a Reading fan. Has the sort of leaving the Reading bubble given you any more sort of perspective on Reading and things since you've left?
Perspective. Well, I guess being outside of the Premier League again, it made me realise how little focus there is on Reading outside of the actual town. Obviously, like you're saying, you know, I now work in the national newspapers and you try and pitch in Reading stories and stuff like that as much as you can, but there's little or no interest, which is a shame because I think that there's some really good players at the club. Possibly the league position at the moment is a little bit below where they want to be. I'm sure they want to be in those top two, but I think Reading is a decent championship this season still, and I think this game this weekend might finally get a little bit of the spotlight deserves, what with being on TV and being an early kickoff. So that's good. And I'm pleased for the club. I know it's a bit of a transition at the moment, but I think that it's a huge season in so many ways, especially with everything that's going on behind the scenes and in the boardroom and stuff like that, whatever is going on, I think it's a massive season for the club.
Absolutely. And you said you've seen QPR a few times, ready to play them on Saturday. From the outside, they look like a team that's, you know, just basically strolling their way back up to the top. I know they had a little wobble in the last few weeks, but are they a team you can see running away with the division?
Yeah, easily. The most times I've seen them play, they haven't even played that well, but they still come away with wins. They've got such a strong squad there, and you wouldn't put it past them come January again if Redknapp went shopping for yet more players. I mean, they're doing the opposite way to Reading, in the fact that they're just throwing every single pound that they have and possibly might not have at the whole promotion course. So if they didn't get promoted this season, it would be an absolute travesty for them, both financially in terms of Harry Redknapp's future and a lot of the players at club's future. So they've kind of gone all bust, and it's working at the moment, put it that way, because I don't think that there's going to be any team that's going to stop them this season. I know they got beaten up at Burnley the other week, but I just can't see anyone getting close to QPR. I thought Wigan would be right up there as well. Obviously, they've had the Europa League situation, so that's been tough for them to take and kind of get used to all of that. But yeah, if QPR aren't automatically promoted, then I think it'll be a huge shock to everyone in football.
Do you think they're a team that they can be avoided? I mean, West Ham, obviously the season Reading won the league, West Ham started in quite strong fashion as well. Do you think they've got the toughness to stick out over 46 game championship season?
Yeah, I do. Because if you look at the core of the squad, you've got Robert Green, Clint Hill, Joey Barton, Carl Henry. Up front, sometimes they look a little bit short, but they've got a lot of decent midfield players in there as well. I know they just lost Fowling, which is a huge blow. But I just think the core of that squad is just pure, you know, championship stalwarts and players that have played Premier League football and international football for most of their careers. So I can't see that anyone's going to come close to them this season. I don't think they'll do a West Ham. I know that when West Ham, everyone was saying that they'll go straight back up, and they had a really decent squad as well. I think QPR are more like that Newcastle side that slipped down a few years ago, who just kind of steamrolled with everyone really, and once they got into their stride, that was it. They were flying.
Johnny, thank you very much for taking time to join us.
No worries. Cheers, guys. I'll have to come and see you soon. It's better than doing it over Skype.
You're always welcome, mate. Always welcome in the living room.
Yeah, perfect.
Speak to you later, Johnny. Take care.
Cheers, Dad. Thanks.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Thanks again to Johnny. Hopefully we'll be chatting with him again some point later this season. He's been bold in predicting a Reading win, I think, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, again with Fordham, he didn't get much right when he was a Reading reporter, so yeah. I wouldn't pin my hopes too much on
Sticking
that.
Sticking the nose in after he's left the photo, Westy.
Yeah, there we go.
Indeed. No, thanks very much to Johnny for joining us. Apologise for some of the audio issues in that. Unfortunately, sometimes you just get a slightly dodgy line over Skype as we pull the curtain back. But no, thanks anyway to Johnny for joining us. So moving on now to other people that have got in touch with us, and thank you very much to everyone who sent in their questions, comments and whatnot. We've had absolutely loads this week.
And I said to you, Wim, you always get more when you get beat.
and people have flocked to give the feedback, and we really do appreciate it, guys. I said, if you're on Twitter, use the hashtag TTE podcast. It's the best way to get make sure your thoughts get on the show. I've picked some of the other ones on the Twitter timeline, but if you use that, it'll get straight to us. Who better to start with then to start the Fisher Fantasy feedback than the unsung hero of this podcast, who is Arthur Bowden. He's our producer. He's the man that painstakingly edits out all of our goals and gaffes. That's a Danny Baker video. All of our gaffes and edits and whatnot every week and works through the night. So thanks to Arthur for that. You're a hero in our eyes. But anyway, his tweet this week saying that has to be one of the worst defending displays I've ever seen from the team. Players all over the place. Ashley Holloway says, the positives from today's game, the half-time pie. Suffolk Royal says, we're in a false position, too many inconsistencies to make us any more than an average championship side. And Danny Alessandrelli says, team appears to be under orders to play it out from the back. That worked well then. reaction to that first little batch?
Well, I think we said it in the start of the show that he's asking players to play football when I don't think they're comfortable on the ball. And we said that from the start of the season. It doesn't seem to be getting any better.
No, I don't know about a false position. I think Reading, the best teams do get points when they're playing badly.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more to come from Reading. I don't think they should be fifth. I do think the division is a very open one this year outside of maybe QPR and possibly it looks like Burnley now.
But again, you say with the Championship, we've said it in a lot of the games this season, they could go either way. And there's a few games I thought Reading, Blackpool for one, they could have got some out of and they didn't. And other games when they got some out of and they didn't. So it averaged itself out. But in general, I'd say Reading are at the moment probably a top six side. And I don't think they're in a false position. I think they're just about where they should be, but they probably should be higher. That's the problem.
And you talk about false position. The position that matters is the amount of points away from the top two, and it's shown how they're not at that quality yet.
Yeah, nowhere near it.
And just around at the post Sheffield Wednesday tweet, saying we've got Jake Sundstrom who says, just disappointing effort from a side that seemed like they were already thinking about next week's fixture. While Clyde says, let's look at the positives. But Gremiak scored again. And I think that is a genuine positive. I mean, we talked about Billy Sharp coming back into the side, but he's actually going to have a job because Pog has been playing really well. So unless they play a two, it'd be very harsh, I think, to drop for Gremiak.
Well, I didn't think he played particularly well against Millwall. And again, he seems to have been putting in better performances away from home, which is new for him, because before he was somewhere he could hide.
I thought he was my man of the match, I think, against Donny.
Yeah, Doncaster, yeah, he did play well, but I didn't think he played particularly well against Millwall. No. But again, I think that position next to him is up for grabs. He seems to have nailed it down now, and he's certainly playing better than he has done since he's been in.
Well, he's got, what, I think it's 4 goals now? So
yeah, you can't really complain about that. Games, yeah. So, he's not on penalties. Put him on penalties, he might have had 6 or 7.
Yeah, a bit mean of Lafondre to take it, but... Alfie loves a goal.
He's a goal scorer.
He is a goal scorer, right. So move on to a few other tweets, sort of more general questions. Joe Stevenson, big fan of the show. Thanks again for getting in touch. Says, question for the podcast, guys. Are you worried about how easy it seems to penetrate our defence? Kelly for Bridge can't be the only reason.
No, it's not the only reason. I said last week, it's movement and pace in front of Reading. It's the same in the Premier League. It'll be the same all the time. If you run at Reading, they will crumble.
Yeah, and if you want a bit more analysis on that defence, as I said, Tommy's written a great article on the website now, so go leave your comments there. But it's too easy for me.
Stick a ball up in the air, they'll be fine all day long. Well, except if Kelly's playing left back. But in general, that's fine. But if you run at them, if you have any sort of movement, they move like trains, especially Pierce. He turns like a train.
Yeah, and last, and round off the tweets, couple more people chipping in with their players they've disliked. A little running theme that's gone on now. Yeah. I think we've switched it now to players we've liked. But no, we'll keep having
that's,
a few people.
That's boring.
In the spirit of a 5-2 defeat. Alex Forbes says, following previous questions about hating players, can I make a late entry for Stephen Hunt for that stupid hat on Match of the Day? I can only presume he means Peter Cech's protective headgear.
Yeah, Stephen Hunt, he didn't exactly, wherever he goes, he doesn't exactly endear people. So yeah, I can agree with Stephen
Hunt. Has
Stephen
got a club now?
I don't know if he's had a club for the last 4 years. Just
I swear
taking,
I read him a link with him on deadline day.
Just be taking wages from somebody.
Oh, well. To be fair, he put in a good shift at times.
Stephen Hunt is one of those players who had one good year which made the rest of their career. So for that, you can say fair play to him. Because before, when he was at Brentford, he was slipping out of the leagues. And again, I think he just nearly signed for Bradford before he signed for us. So he'd done one good year. And there's a lot of footballers you can look back who've done that in their careers, had one decent season and made a fortune.
Yeah. Well, and Jack Pape says, on disliked players, never really took to Ian Hart. Gamesmanship, always first in ref's face, plus the roasting got at Wembley didn't help. Worth it all, though, for some free kicks.
Again, Ian Hart was...
Bit of a figure for the boot boys, though, wasn't he, Ian Hart?
Yeah, but to be fair to him, he's another one who slipped down the divisions and made his way back. He had talent, but what he lacked, in some things, he gained in others.
It did some at all, though. For me, about our whole Premiership campaign, when I'm sorry, but you're playing Ian Hart back in the Premier League.
Yeah, ridiculous.
That very few players go from League One back up to the Premier League.
No, not at his age.
In their mid-30s.
No. And again, it was another point that I made earlier that McDermott had a black spot at left and right back.
Yeah, and it seems to continue, unfortunately. Right, a couple of emails then. Sorry, a few more tweets. I apologise. Completely missing off a page. We've still got 4 more tweets. So hold the presses for you to complain at Unrelated Tweet. Steve Guskett, a very disappointing result on Saturday, but a lot of overreaction going on. Injuries are really catching up with us now. We need to get a few more bodies back in the squad. Hopefully that'll be Williams and Sharp this weekend. Are people really being serious when they suggest Jake Taylor plays? Hector needs to be recalled or Tish Bowler gets in the squad. Clearly players in the squad, Atkins doesn't rate, but he has to play. Kelly being one, lack of left-back cover is a concern. Keep the faith, it's still a long way to go. Remember, it took Coppell 2 years to build the 05-06 squad. We were world beaters 2 weeks ago when we beat Doncaster
Now we're rubbish, according to many on Twitter. Hashtag realism. Sorry.
World beaters.
Yeah, that wasn't one tweet. That's what I thought it was an email. It was several tweets together. But no, genuinely, really do appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for taking the time. Lots to digest over in that. Just picking out a few things. I think Jake Taylor playing, I don't think he's going to make a difference maker. Tishbowler's still young.
It's an absolute nonsense. I mean, people pick these names out of the air who they've never seen play. Most of these people who wrote that they should be in a team have probably never seen a play ever. And they're young boys. And if they were any good, they would be in the team.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a half a case for Hector now, but again, you've seen him play. At least you've seen him play, though.
Completely unproven in the division, and we've seen him score one goal on YouTube. No.
And he does a fair point, though. Did take a long time for Koppel to build a squad. I'll keep going back to this article. You're going to have to read it now. I'm banging on about it.
Yeah.
I said to get to Koppel's great side, you had to go through the rubbish sides. And we mentioned it last week, players like Paul Brooker and Lloyd Owusu. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we are expecting a bit too much too soon, especially if this massive financial push.
Oh, yeah, we certainly are. But again, Koppel didn't have anywhere near the budget that's been spent on Redden over the last 2 years.
No.
Well, wages-wise, anyway.
No, it is the strongest squad they've ever had. But still, it takes more than a good squad to make a good team.
Of course.
Anyway, that's my out of the Brendan Rodgers book.
That was nice, that.
Bumper book of tactics. At John Beck says, Wim, the Adkins way of passing out for the back is good in principle. However, Morrow and Pierce totally inept in this style. Nick Law says, we have to be realistic. We're Reading FC, not Manchester City. Even with money, it doesn't mean players will want to come here. And John Keane, just to round off this tweet, says, the whole Reading FC experience right now, on and off the field, can be summed up in one word, joyless.
Yeah, it is at the moment. It is joyless. There's nothing to excite anybody. And I think it was John Beck there said about Pierce and Morrison, basically what I've been saying about them. But they're not the only two players in that team that are not what I'd call footballers. Lafondra isn't. Paul Grebniak can be. In fact, he can only take it at his feet. Otherwise, you're looking around the pitch and you say, who would you trust on the ball? I wouldn't say anybody, not particularly. Whereas the 06 team, you had players like Little on the wing, players Sidwell, all them sort of players were comfortable on the ball. Inga Marson was steady on the ball. Shorey was steady on the ball. We haven't got them players anymore.
No, unfortunately not. Fingers crossed. I mean, it is a very young squad, so there is plenty of time to develop
There's certainly progression. There's certainly improvement in them, but it's whether you're going to see it this season.
Yeah. And we have got a couple of emails as well, just to round off the feedback section. First one's from Ollie, who's a season ticket holder from Derby. He says, hi guys, started listening to your podcast this season. Always find it a good listen. Thank you very much, Ollie. Just thought I'd share my views. Left after the 5th goal on Saturday, but didn't actually think we played that bad. 5-2 was extremely harsh, and all the goals were from individual errors. I'm fully behind Adkins, but he needs a settled formation, preferably 4-3-3, as don't see any long-term benefits with 4-4-2, and has no potential in the Premiership. The teams that have gone up and done really well were built from modern formations and tactics, see Southampton and Swansea. Really hope Adkins gets the time and players he needs, otherwise it's back to square one.
Yeah, I don't know why he doesn't stick to a system every week. I heard him talking about on the radio, Williams and Goodin was talking about after the match, and they said, I don't know why you go to a club and change our system to suit them. We said this earlier in the season as well. If Redden got the players that we believe they have, the team should be worried about us, not the other way around.
Yeah, but this, I'll defend Atkins. I think this, again, goes back to the whole injury front in that he starts the team playing in a certain way and then suddenly he has four or five players ripped away from him. But then what do? Do you panic and go back and just say, you know what, lads, players you were in Abraham McDermott until we get these players back? Or do you say...
You can't, I suppose.
Or do you say, and just have to persevere and keep plugging through? That's what Brendan Rodgers tried to do. Obviously blew up completely in his face. Thankfully, Adkins has got a bit of a bigger squad that's coming back.
He's definitely got better players as well.
So hopefully this doesn't blow up in Adkins' face. But I do have sympathy. You've got to keep trying these things, even if your players aren't quite built for it.
Yeah, definitely. Again, I can't argue with you, but I'm saying it just surprised me that he does seem to change his system depending on who we're playing.
Yeah.
And the day he should have done it against Millwall, he didn't, and we come unstuck.
No. Well... Yeah, I agree. And final bit of feedback comes from Mr. Brian Davis, long-time listener show, and thanks again, Brian.
Oh, yes.
You'll have to check. Brian has just started a podcast as well.
Brian?
On the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, really? I'll have to check that out then, because he's been a long-time listener, so I've at least showed the support back.
So a bit of a plug there. I really apologise. I can't remember the web URL, but as soon as it's actually published and live, we'll give it a retweet on the site.
We will, mate.
So keep an eye on it. But anyway, Brian says, my thoughts on Reading, and this goes way back before Saturday's debacle too. There used to be a time when a 5-2 away defeat meant my weekend was ruined. Saturday night used to be the night out on the source, just forget about it. I wouldn't even entertain talking about it. We're talking about it with the Match of the Day fans at work on a Monday. However, since we made it to the Premier League and we have seen what modern football is now really all about,
honestly don't care anymore. 5-2 defeat? Oh well, I'm over it before the final whistle. The feeling of being a fan just isn't there anymore. The club don't care about us, they just want our money, and the players seemingly don't care. Many of the current mob are just a bunch of who are only interested in self-promoting on Twitter, and there's very few players who actually make me want to go and support the team on a Saturday. I like the appointment of Adkins, but his nature, arrogant ways, pointless say-nothing sign bites are hardly winning me over. I'll always love the club, they'll always be my team, but do I care for this bunch? Not at all. Maybe it's the time of life I'm in, and maybe there are more sensible things to be worried about than the football. But for me, it's just not the same anymore. Maybe it's also the realisation that the sport has changed. It's just taken some of us a little longer to give up holding on for the old days. Disinterested, disheartened and disassociated of Wiltshire. Brian Davis.
Say nothing soundbites. I like that. Atkins does like his say nothing soundbites, I must admit.
Wim,
that was a gloomy post to last.
No, I've got some positives to end on the show on. So.
Oh, that's Atkins.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, we move forward. Oh, that's right. That's McDermott.
Well, the first 15 minutes.
Tenacity, spirit, flair.
As this podcast said, the first 15 minutes started off really well.
Yeah, we just lost our shape.
Then we faded away and give up.
What did you make of then for Brian?
I think that's a cry for help. I think Brian might need some intervention. Luckily, I'm on the counselling course, Brian, so if you do need to talk, I'm available.
I have a lot of sympathy with what Brian's saying. I don't think that... I think a lot of... This might sound overdramatic. I think a lot of innocence was lost with Reading Football Club when they've been in the Premier League and out of it again.
Because
we went from being a small little local team, and you sort of knew a lot of people around the terraces and stuff, because it was the same faces, you know. We're only in... I find it amazing, if you even look back 10 years in the Medici Stadium history, when it used to get 12,000, 13,000 people.
Yeah.
And now we're saying, oh, what a small crowd 17,000 is.
Yeah. It's a price of success, isn't it? If you want to watch a team win, that's what's going to happen. It's as simple as that. I know what he's saying. It is a bit disheartening, the fact that there doesn't seem to be... It's madness, really, because when I was little, to sit fifth in a championship was...
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have been over the moon with that. But now you look at it, it's like, well, we should be doing better. I think that's the problem. The expectation is high, and what we're seeing on the pitch is relatively low compared to what we're expecting. That's where the problem lies. That's why people are disheartened at the moment. And he is right. There isn't many players on a pitch now I will go down and pay money to see. Whereas before, I used to have my favourites here and there. At the moment, it's hard to pick a favourite out of that side.
It is difficult. There's not a lot of people where you go, you know, I really want that guy's name on the back of my shirt. That guy will die for any football club. To be honest, there's not a lot of players like that in football anymore. But the sour taste in the mouth from bits of last season, Alex Pearce is the best example of it.
Mm.
I know he signed a new deal and he still gives, I'm sure he's given 110% for the shirt. But again, you've lost a little bit of that. Alex Pearce was a real club sort of hero. He'd come through the ranks, he'd beaten off the Boo Boys, and he's really played international football.
Yeah.
Suddenly, agents, contracts, modern football gets in the way. And again, I still find it hard to get behind him in the same way, because I'd written him off as gone.
I assumed he was leaving, and I think he assumed he was leaving at some point, and he didn't. He did lose a little bit of that support, I think, from the fans, as you do. Jem Karajan, he's the sort of player that, again, I've said before, I'm not a particularly big fan of him, but the older he gets, the more he matures a footballer, the more I'm beginning to like him, because what he gives you, his heart and soul, and that's all you can ask of anybody, and I'm not sure everyone does that.
And we mentioned it with the dislike players as well. Again, people like Jason Roberts, his overuse of social media and stuff, and it just starts to wind you up.
It's too much about Jason Roberts, not about him getting fit and coming and playing.
Just overall, you look at the pitch and you're like... There's very few people to really get behind.
Yeah.
And
the thing is, you're asked now to support Paul Grebniak when for the last year he's done absolutely nothing, took a fortune out of the club. Now he's putting in a few decent performances and scoring, which he should be doing anyway. I work for Royal Mail, I pay to deliver letters. If I do it, I get paid. If I don't, I get the sack. You know what I mean? No one's coming around cheering at me and telling me, oh, I'm going to pat me on the back because I've had a bad year. It doesn't happen. He's paid to score goals. I find it hard to support Paul Grebniak because I just don't think he tried for you.
And how... Again, does it not sum it all up when one of the biggest players getting the most cheers from the stands this year is Danny Guthrie?
Yeah, there's another one.
Who nine months ago now, refusing to get on the team bus. It's madness. It really is madness. And I think we are left increasingly clutching at straws.
Yeah, but it just points back to fickle fans, really, because once they win three or four games on the trot, then their emails change, everyone's all saying how great it is all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Just the way it works.
Yeah, well... Fingers crossed, as I said, a few wins. It does, and maybe that does bond the team as well. When it makes you get new favourites, and we do have a few bright sparks, you know.
But the thing is, there's someone there to be made a hero. Someone can make himself a hero if they start putting in a performance.
Jordan Obita, I choose you.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah. I hope he does.
Yeah, very much so. Right, so that rounds up the feedback this week. Thanks very much, guys. As I said, Twitter at the Tarlhurst End. The email address is thetarlhurstend@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, we've been going off for a long time now, Westy.
I feel like I've been here forever. I'm thinking about moving in.
We have, yeah, very much so. Nice comfy couch over there. Please feel free. I'm off to go write the latest Tarlhurst End round table in 15 minutes' time. Yes. So it's about time we wrap this up. Just before we go, one quick thing as well to get your final opinion on. The Player of the Month vote.
Ooh, difficult this month.
Yeah, Danny Guthrie's won it the last two. Who would, off the top of your head, before I tell you the nominees, who was your gut reaction for you was October's Player of the Month?
Well, I suppose, even though I've been slating him for the last hour, it'll probably be Podgorzelczyk because he scored against Sheffield Wednesday and he put in a decent performance against Doncaster.
Sheffield Wednesday was in November.
Oh.
Doesn't count.
Oh, okay, well, it doesn't count. Yeah, but it's already been voted on.
No, you've got to vote for a week now.
Oh, see, this is the problem.
So it's just gone on.
It has a spillover, doesn't it? If someone's had half a decent game, then it gets remembered. So it probably will be Pogrebniak.
Well, Pavel Pogrebniak, as we record this, the article went up earlier today through the absent Johnny Williams. He posted earlier today, Pavel Pogrebniak is leading the way with 50%. So the other main four nominees based on our player ratings this month are Danny Guthrie, Gareth McCleary, Sean Morrison and Jordan Obita. And Pavel Pogrebniak. So those are your five choices.
But arguably, no one could get it this month, and I don't think anyone would be surprised. No one stood out.
I do think, the start of October, you did have the Doncaster win.
Yeah, again, they weren't much cop, and they had a player sent off or a player had to go off. You know what I mean? It was, again, it was a bit of a false result.
Yeah, of those five names, Pav, I suppose. I thought Gareth McCleary had quite a good month, but then maybe I'm just biased from that one Doncaster game.
Again, it's just all based on one game.
Yeah, Guthrie's in second place at the moment, 23% of the vote.
Again, he didn't show for Millwall, he wasn't very good this week.
Morrison hasn't got a vote yet.
No, I don't expect he did. The thing is, no one's really shone. No one can say, oh, you've played brilliant this month. We've had two different goalkeepers in, so you can't even fall back on that.
Yeah.
There's no one, really. So if Paul Granite wins, it'd be by default, more than
anything. Well, go over to the Tarlhurst website and cast your vote anyway, and give us your reasons as well for why you voted, and be much appreciated. So that's about it. Us this week.
Yes.
Next week, we'll be chatting off the back of the QPR result going into the international break.
Will we have cleared up our injury problems?
As a website? As a
yeah, as a team. Yeah.
I don't know. I think Johnny got hit pretty hard by that 5-2 defeat.
I think he's somewhere having a little cry.
Yeah.
He looks like the sort.
Well, here we go. War of words starts. Join us next week where Westy will have a black eye. thanks guys very much for taking the time to send your emails, for listening to the show and whatnot. If you've got any ideas for the website or the podcast, please keep them coming in. You know, I've heard given you all the contact details, but the best place, if you've got more longer thoughts, just send an email to tarlhurstend@gmail.com. If there's something about the podcast you don't like, or you do like and want more of, just send us an email. We say at the very top of every single show, the only Reading FC podcast by fans for fans, and that same motto goes for the website as well. So if you want to get in touch, send us your criticisms or your positives, or get involved yourself, please do. Be very much appreciated. And check out the website, thetarlhurstend.com. Right, time for us to go. Wesley, cool. Kicking you out at last.
It's always a pleasure.
And as I said, we'll be back next week, probably Wednesday or Thursday. Thanks very much for listening.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.